Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session. Please be seated.
Thank you. At this time, we're on record in State versus Abramowski. I'm sorry. And as such, Mr. Ben Grevy will argue on behalf of the appellant and on behalf of the State of Idaho, Lori Fleming. Are there any preliminary matters? Very well, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. What we have here is the rare case where expungement should have been granted. Now, when the prior district judge in this case, Judge Owen, sealed the juvenile proceedings under Administrative Rule 32G9, he found that there were extraordinary circumstances, and those were limitations which related to Matthew's autism spectrum disorder that left him unable to secure employment and independent living opportunities. Now, when the judge also made some comments on the request for expungement, he said that he was going to retire, so he wouldn't actually be addressing that motion himself, but he also stated for the record, if I felt I had legal authority to expunge, I would exercise discretion in the case to grant that. I think Mr. Abramowski has earned some additional consideration from the court, and for what it's worth, I would exercise some discretion with that in mind. But when the second judge assigned to the case after Judge Owen retired denied those requests for expungement, the district court there abused its discretion. So just to give a brief overview of the facts here, Matthew does have an autism spectrum disorder. He had a rough time in his freshman year of high school. He was severely bullied, and he was also unable to communicate or articulate what exactly was going on. So he was charged with arson when he was 15 years old. The court entered a withheld judgment. He entered into juvenile probation and fully complied. And then he was converted over to adult unsupervised probation at 21. And the district court later granted his motion to dismiss, which meant that his sentence was terminated, his plea of guilty was set aside, the case was dismissed, and he was finally discharged.
I have a question about the posture of Mr. Abramowski's case, and in particular his charges originally as a juvenile. I understand that there was a waiver of jurisdiction and that he was waived into adult court, and he received a blended sentence. When he received a blended sentence, does that put us back under the Juvenile Act? And the second part of that question, and I'll tell you why I'm interested. I'm interested because if you look at Idaho Code 20-509, there is an express statute which the legislature passed stating that an arson conviction for a juvenile shall not be expunged. And so I guess I find myself wondering about the very unique posture of this case in that the Juvenile Protection, the Juvenile Act, which in my mind is the most protective of records for people, would not allow for expungement as a matter of law. And yet here we are in an adult case saying that a court rule is going to allow for expungement.
Yes, we are not under the Juvenile Corrections Act, and that was not argued below. So it is a unique procedural stance here. It's a very unique case as well. And our position is, even if the JCA would treat this differently if it were some other case that had been handled in juvenile court, in this particular case, the Administrative Rule 32 does allow for this type of expungement.
What type of relief is Mr. Abramowski asking for that he wasn't granted with the first motion to seal with Judge Owen? And what I'm really after is, what else does he want?
So when we're talking about expungement, Your Honor, we're talking about redacting the case material so that they don't show up in a state public record search. And when Judge Owen sealed the record, it still allows for this information about the case to show up on a repository search. And
what shows up?
So what shows up, if you look at, say, I-Courts, for example, is it shows up that there is a withheld judgment that was dismissed and was for an arson case.
Okay, and so his specific request for relief is what?
Is that the court redact the case materials so that they don't show up on the repository like that. And our position is that...
So it's as if you put in Mr. Abramowski's name, that it would show nothing with respect to this particular case.
Yes. What we've argued is that these records showing up have caused him financial or economic harm or loss in terms of not being able to get housing and not being able to take up employment because this shows up on a record search.
Mr. McGreevy, what we're talking about here then is not a true expungement that we would typically see in the case of a juvenile, but an administrative expungement in the sense that the records would be not seen by the public. The earlier motion that was granted by the judge on March 30th, pursuant to Court Administrative Rule 32G, now that wasn't an exercise of discretion, was it? Wasn't it required to grant that request because those records should have been exempt from disclosure anyway?
I would disagree, and I say that because the judge's stance in that case was that there are extraordinary circumstances under G9 which justified the sealing.
But the records that he sealed in his first decision were psychiatric, psychological, personal records related to mental health and stuff. Aren't those required to be sealed even without a motion being filed?
Yes, and let me clarify. When I talk about the extraordinary circumstances, Your Honor, I'm talking about the rest of the juvenile proceedings. And the court in that situation exercised discretion and found extraordinary circumstances. So I'm not talking about the mental health records. And yes, those were under mandate to be sealed. But in terms of the rest of the juvenile proceedings, that was discretionary.
So what got sealed on March 30th besides the evaluations and testing results?
So all of the juvenile proceedings that were done from between the withheld judgment, basically, up until he turned 21, if I recall correctly.
But the judgment of conviction and those things still stayed in the record?
No, I believe actually withheld judgment is part of the sealed documents now.
So what is unsealed that you're seeking to have administratively sealed pursuant to 32I?
So we're seeking to redact the court records as they show up on the repository in terms of a public record search.
The fact that there was a conviction, is that what you're asking, that that be redacted, even though it was reduced under?
Yes, I mean, put otherwise, the relief sought here is that we don't want these case materials to show up in a state public record search. That is what that's what's causing the financial or economic loss or harm here.
When you say state materials, is it just the conviction or the entire file?
It would be the entire file. So it would be as if you put this case information or you do a search and it would not show up in a state repository search.
But I feel like maybe I'm flogging a dead horse, but it's still not clear to me. The file materials themselves, every document in Mr. Abramowski's file is sealed from public view, correct? Presently.
I'm not sure if all of them are, Your Honor, but yes, most of them. And a lot of the ones from that area in between his withheld judgment and his turning 21.
And so this case really involves a data entry from the court that indicates that there was in fact a juvenile matter involving Mr. Abramowski.
Yes, that's our argument, Your Honor. And reread Rule 32I as being broad enough to cover this kind of request for this kind of redaction.
What provision of Rule 32I discusses deleting any reference to the case? Certainly I can understand if there's certain documents that are sensitive, but it sounds like you're asking for relief that goes beyond Rule 32I and beyond what was contemplated in State versus Turpin back in 2009.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the part of the rule saying that people may move to disclose, redact, seal, or unseal, I think that this would come under the redact language that this court used when it promulgated the rule. And It may not quite be what was at issue in Turpin, but it is similar to what this court was addressing in Gurney, which is a case that the state cited to. And in Gurney, this court did not say as a matter of law or as a matter of interpreting the rule that that relief was not available to the appellant in that case.
So under 32I2, which of the provisions there would justify the relief you're seeking?
So we argue that under 2C, which talks about economic or financial loss or harm, and the court does have to make written findings that one of these six provisions apply, and that's the provision we are asserting applies to Matthew's case. Now, the court also needs to make a determination that the individual interest in privacy predominates over the public interest in disclosure, and we assert that the district court abuses discretion here because under these particular unique facts, Matthew's interest in privacy does predominate over the public interest in disclosure.
Is that a question you're asking us to resolve as a matter of law? In
this
case, I mean, if it's a factual question, meaning there were competing alternatives, isn't that the penultimate point of discretion and that the judge could view those alternatives and make a choice? We're trying to now say, well, that choice was wrong because his interests predominate, and so you made the wrong choice. How do we get there in a discretionary standard review?
You can get there, Your Honor, under these particular facts. And what we have here is we have Matthew, who has these limitations, and the limitations are what Judge Owen talked about in the order granting the motion to seal. And you have that, and you have his criminal history. And we also have evidence on this particular record to show that his criminal history is making it hard for him to get employment and housing. So we're not asking the court to say as a matter of law in every case, this is how it should go. But under these particular facts, in Matthew's own case, the individual privacy interest predominates.
Mr. McGreevy, why isn't this a John Doe case as opposed to giving the name of the person that you're trying to keep protected from this kind of scrutiny?
Your Honor, I think that's maybe a question that would be better addressed by the district court. I think that kind of filing really has to be made in the district court, and I think once you get to the level of the appeal, you're not allowed to change the caption that way, and I think that's what this court ruled in Gurney, because Gurney tried to change it from Gurney to Rob G., and I think what this court held in Gurney is that at that point it was too late for that kind of change to be made. So we assert that the district court used discretion not only in terms of denying the original motion for expungement, but also the motion for reconsideration, and especially in light of this additional information that was presented, the information about how he had not been able to find work despite having 80 to 90 applications being made. The only work he's able to find was working maybe 1 to 2 hours a week as a cameraman, but there was testimony that for the past 6 weeks he wasn't even able to get any hours for that position. We also have the letter that was introduced from the housing agency, which indicated various reasons why they rejected his application. But based on testimony presented at the motion for reconsideration hearing, the only reason which really made any sense under these particular facts was Matthew's criminal history. So in light of that, the privacy interest here is great because we do have evidence that Matthew has suffered economic or financial loss or harm under the purview of the rule. And the public interest here, there is always going to be a balancing between those two interests, but the public interest here is lessened because what we have here is his act was the culmination of events that are unlikely to occur again. Matthew is not the same person he was at 15. At 15, he was isolated. He was being relentlessly bullied in school. He wasn't able to articulate what was going on. So he really used this as a way of acting out, trying to get help. And now He has a much better support network. He does volunteer work. He's active in his church. He has a lot more support, and he also has a lot more tools through his hundreds and thousands of hours of therapy and counseling to deal with things that might be much easier for someone without autism spectrum disorder to deal with. But someone who has that additional set of challenges, it's much harder for them to perhaps deal with that. But he has a much broader range of tools now after having gone through probation and after having gone through all of this counseling and therapy. So, again, this is the act here is the result of events that are unlikely to occur again. So that does lessen, we assert, the public's interest in disclosure here.
Mr. McGreevy, sometimes when we look at these kind of rules, we don't consider the earlier provisions that deal with the statement of policy. In Section A of Court Administrative Rule 32 is the aspirational language, which talks about a public policy rationale that favors access to records. The fourth and fifth criteria under A are that access to the records contribute to public safety and minimize the risk of injury to individuals. To the extent we're sort of being asked to second guess the trial judge's decision, why wouldn't those two concerns be first and foremost in our minds as we consider this?
That is part of the weighing that the district court has to do and that this court has to do. So you are correct in that respect, Your Honor. But I believe one of the other criteria listed is the protection of privacy interests. And we also have Matthew's privacy interest at play here. And the policy is going to guide this court in most cases or guide the district courts in most cases. But if expungement, if this type of relief is not going to be granted in this case for this particular individual, then we have to ask, where would this kind of expungement relief be granted? The court created these provisions in 32i for a reason, and it was to act as a safety valve in this type of rare case where the privacy interest of the individual does predominate over the public's interest in disclosure. So I would ask the court to consider that, to look not only at the public's interest in disclosure and safety, but also look at Matthew's individual interest in privacy. So if there are no further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time at this time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
On behalf of the state.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. The issue in this case is whether the district court abused its discretion by denying Mr. Abramowski's motions for expungement and for reconsideration. In resolving that question, the issue is not whether the district court who originally presided over the case would have granted the relief that was requested. It's not even whether this court would have granted the relief had it been presented with the motions in the first instance. The question is whether the court who actually ruled on the motions recognized its decisions as discretionary, acted within the boundaries of its discretion and consistently with applicable legal standards, and exercised reason. An application of that standard of review shows no abuse of discretion by the district court in this case. I don't want to belabor the points I made in my brief, so I'll try to just respond to some of the court's questions this morning. And Justice Brody, starting with your question about the unique posture of this case. This case was not brought under the JCA. This case was automatically waived from juvenile corrections to adult court pursuant to the automatic waiver provisions of the Juvenile Corrections Act. So Mr. Abramowski was tried or charged as an adult. All proceedings up to sentencing were had as an adult. And then at sentencing, the court imposed essentially a blended sentence, kind of transmogrifying it into a juvenile proceeding until the court then converted back to supervised or unsupervised adult probation. So we have, it is a unique posture, but this case was always brought as a criminal case. And for that reason, it doesn't fall within the expungement provisions of the Juvenile Corrections Act. So while the state recognizes that, the state also recognizes the Juvenile Corrections Act says juveniles don't get expungement of arson convictions. That provision doesn't apply literally, but the state would suggest that's a legislative determination, or an indication at least, that arson is an extremely serious crime for which there's a great interest in public disclosure, partially, I assume, because Justice Mueller, as you noted, there's an interest in public safety and preventing injury to other persons. And arson is a very dangerous crime. And the district court in this case recognized that as part of its analysis in determining that the public interest predominated over Mr. Abramowski's privacy interests. Justice Mueller, you asked about whether Mr. Abramowski is seeking relief beyond Rule 32. And Rule 32 is fairly broad. It talks about, in Rule 32(I)(1), any person or the court on its own motion may move to disclose, redact, seal, or unseal part or all of the records in any judicial proceeding. So the court certainly has discretion to seal or redact all or part of records. But Mr. Abramowski's request seems to go beyond that. It seems to be in the nature of requesting a juvenile expungement. And he is not entitled to that for the reasons we've already discussed. He was not tried as a juvenile. And what juvenile records exist, or what court-deemed juvenile records, have been expunged, sealed from public access. Justice Bevin, you asked about how do we get to an abuse of discretion. Are we really just being asked, is the court being asked to second-guess the district judge's weighing process? And the state's response is, yes, that's what Mr. Abramowski is asking this court to do. The state recognizes Mr. Abramowski's unique circumstances, his autism spectrum disorder diagnosis, the limitations that accompany that, the progress he's made since he committed this arson. But the district courts recognized that as well and factored that into the balancing test. And the district court ultimately determined that the public interest predominated. And again, I would submit that the legislature has already sort of made that determination with respect to the juvenile expungement statute. But also, with respect to this specific case, Mr. Abramowski is asserting that he's been economically harmed because he can't find independent housing and employment opportunities. Well, the fact that someone has been convicted or charged with a first-degree arson of a home where injury could have occurred is exactly the type of important information that prospective employers and landlords would want to know about the people that they hire or house. So unless this court truly second-guesses the district court's weighing process, there is no basis to find an abuse of discretion in this case. The court applied the correct legal standards. It made the factual determination, and it reached a decision by an exercise of reason. So unless the court has questions, the state would ask this court to affirm.
How much time does the appellant have?
13 minutes. Sir? Thank you, Your Honor. So briefly, I would like to address 2 points made by the state's response. First, the state is now arguing that this request goes outside or goes beyond the scope of Rule 32I, but it's my belief that the state did not argue that in its briefing, so I just want to flag that for the court. And then my second point, the state does argue that this type of conviction is important information that prospective landlords or employers want to know. And that is correct, but we assert that under these unique circumstances where Mr. Abramowski Matthew is limited not only by his criminal record, but also by his limitations from his autism spectrum disorder, that even in the face of that interest in public disclosure, his own individual privacy interest still predominates. So
let me ask you, the state responded to my question indicating that Mr. Abramowski had always been charged as an adult, that there was no juvenile charge. I've got the amended and corrected order withholding judgment and order of probation and commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sentence in the first paragraph. The defendant was duly informed of the information filed against him, which crime was committed on or about April 26, 2009, of having been waived into adult court pursuant to 2508, 509, and of his guilty plea. So is the state correct that, is this sentence wrong in the order? Or was he always charged as an adult and there was no waiver?
So I think the state is correct in saying that it was automatically waived into adult court. So I don't have any issue with the state's presentation of those facts.
Okay.
Yeah, again, it's my understanding that he was automatically waived.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, we would ask this court to vacate the district court's denials of Matthew's motions for expungement and remand the case.
Mr. McGreevy, I would just note, too, just as you conclude, that I appreciate your report on how your client is doing. I suspect he may be in a courtroom here today, and whatever this court decides, I think it's important to note that he's doing better. For what it's worth, I think it was appropriate that he got the withheld judgment. That seems like that was appropriate relief in this case, so thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.